Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the freshly raised barn of Jolly Rogers Studio. This is the Q Filmcast, and whether you're with us online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you know the show, then you know what we do. Every week, we pull a film from our Netflix queue for review. We gather around here at Jolly Rogers Studio where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we agree to disagree, and sometimes we're just friggin' speechless. But we always show up, so here we are. We also get into our top three list, which is always inspired by the movie in question. And this week, that movie is the 1985 barn-raising hide-and-seek thriller, as I call it. Do you like that?
Yeah. I love that.
Do you get it? Barn-raising?
I get it.
Hide-and-seek thriller, Max. Yeah. You get
they
that?
They raised a barn?
And someone was hiding and someone was seeking.
Right.
God,
I got it.
I'm proud of myself. We're talking about Witness. We're talking about the Peter Weir film from 1985 starring Harrison Ford, Kelly McGinnis, Joseph Sommer, Danny Glover, and a very young Lucas Haas.
Very young.
And Kelly McGillis.
I said that.
And Viggo Mortensen.
Alan Viggo. Yeah, very much obscure Viggo Mortensen. Right. Talk about hide and seek.
We just call him Smiley.
Yeah, right. He was just kind of like, It was like, where's Waldo? Yeah, you can just look for him. Oh, there he is. Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah, he just looked totally stoked to be standing next to Harrison Ford the whole movie.
Did you sense that?
Yeah.
Just kept staring at him like, that's Harrison.
Yeah, if you like Viggo Mortensen and you like the Where's Waldo game, this is your movie.
There you go.
He's there.
He is there. Yeah. So that's the film this week, Witness 1985. If you've seen it, you keep listening to see if you agree or disagree. Or if not, you keep listening to see if it's something you may want to queue up yourself. That's how the game is played.
That's right.
And we talk about a top three list every week. I mentioned that earlier. This week, we're talking about top three Stranger in a Strange Land movies. I Don't Belong Here films.
Yeah, Fish Out of Water.
We're talking about Strangers in a Strange Land. Let's keep it there.
There you go.
So that's the show this week, guys. Witness. So let's get it going. And welcome once again to the Q. I'm Michael, along with, as always to my left, a man who was never born Stumpink. You are not Stumpink, sir. Right. We're talking about the 6'4" glorious man that is James Hartsub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I don't know.
Du bist du, Maestro.
Whatever, Savage. you having a good week?
I'm having a good week. How about you?
I'm having a good week. I tell you why I'm having a good week.
Yeah?
I've been very much safe out there among them English.
Them English. Got to watch them English.
Yeah, I did not have an old man get me up at 4 in the morning because it's 4:30, time for milking.
That's always good.
but I also was not asphyxiated by cracked feed corn.
That's a good thing.
It's got to be a rough way to go.
That's a terrible way to go.
Of all the ways to go, don't do that to me.
Kills.
Crack kills. You know, he was creamed by corn.
Oh,
you
no.
Like that?
He was.
Oh, shucks. That's so bad.
Oh, man. I love it. This is off. This is coming out hot, man. And speaking of hot, I only go to your left.
Oh, you're going to me?
No, stop. That's my right. We're talking about the patron saint to your left, Savage. He's here every week, no different now. Yep. This is the patron saint quality outerwear, and that is Matthew Saint Hoodie.
Hey, hi.
How are you? Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Is a shapeless black gown and a bonnet considered quality outerwear?
It's something.
I know it looks great on you right now.
Well, I'd like to celebrate the movie.
He does. Yeah.
How about no buttons?
Yeah, no buttons.
That's key to a shapeless black thing.
You have a problem with zippers?
Oh, zippers. I got a whole thing. That's what I did my dissertation on.
Nicely done. Yeah. The patron saint. There he is. And to his left, we're talking about, you know him, Max Gumbo Johnson.
I am witness to this film.
You have witnessed this film.
I am witness to this film.
We're talking about the greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast. That's Adam the Bomb Rogers.
Gunderdog.
Gunderdog. See it?
Gunderdog.
Gunderdog?
Yeah. Guten Abend.
Wasn't that a comic book in the 80s? Gunderdog?
It should have been.
Hey, right. That would be the best.
It was. An Amish comic book.
I'm impressed, Savage, because I think the only German word he knew before this night was Scheiser.
Scheiser.
Whoa. And that goes back to our episode a few weeks ago.
I would totally chili dog that.
You chili dog the producer?
Yeah. No.
Oh. Hey!
Not her. Not him.
Herm.
All right.
Herm.
I do not have moobs.
No, but you don't have teats either. And at least not ones that
big. That's the same thing.
Let's get into it, guys. We're getting a little festive here at the queue. Yeah. The Amish, they aren't this festive. Yeah, they're very dour, serious
people.
They would
hate
this
episode.
Common.
So what we need
they'll
to do
never hear it.
Let's get a little Amish here.
Right.
Let's get a little Amish. Let's bring it down a notch, calm it down, and let's talk about how you keep up with the queue film cast, and let's do that first.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into some other things like what the critics thought, what we thought. We're going to hear a trailer. We're going to get into our top three Stranger in a Strange Land movies. We're going to do all this stuff.
That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah,
cool.
We're going to raise a barn. We're going to churn some butter. We're going to seduce people from a different culture.
We're going to pickle some peaches.
We're going to shoot Danny.
They did.
We're going to shoot Danny Glover and that guy with a big mustache.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Wait a second. Let's talk about how to keep up with this. We're talking about Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google, YouTube. You can do whatever you want.
All those things.
It doesn't matter. You want to find us, we're there. Arms. Yeah. We're open arms. But you can certainly find us at thecufilmcast.net. Qfilmcast.net. Go there.
Real quick, if you're Amish, you can send a letter to 120 Peachtree Street, Nashville, Tennessee, 37210.
Or if you met a nut, you can use a phone if you go into town.
You know what would be awesome? What? If I actually got a letter at 120 Peachtree Street,
from
Nashville,
the Amish
Tennessee,
Mafia.
37210.
That's 120.
That's 120 Peachtree Street, Nashville, Tennessee, 372.
I think he actually
that
wants
sounds more like an Atlanta.
That's right. Fantastic. So all of our Amish listeners, you have a way to review this film.
Yeah,
with sinners.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Max. Thank you very much.
I would
much.
Love that. Yeah. Send me a letter.
Yeah, please do. God,
it's not a bomb.
Someone, please do.
Amish bomb.
All right, guys, so let's get into it. You ready to cue it up? Cue up the conversation?
Sure.
All right, let's do this thing. Witness 1985. We're talking about Peter Weir. And this was selected by me. Let me tell you why. Because usually I say, well, why'd you cue that up? Well, let me tell you why I queued this up. I didn't want to leave without getting talked about. I think this is one I want to have in the catalog. I was also curious to see. It's been like maybe 8 or 9 years since I've seen this. I wanted to see if it held up. Hmm. I'm always curious. Is this going to hold up? How did I like it then? How did I like it now? That kind of thing. So I thought it was a good film. I've always liked this film. I like this dude, Weir. And plus, Harrison Ford. Only thing he's ever been nominated for. It was nominated for a ton of stuff. Best picture, best cinematography, you know, best score, best director. So anyways, I thought it'd be good to talk about. So there it is. That's why. Let's talk about Peter Weir for a minute. I think we mentioned this last episode. Master and Commander, Dead Poets Society, great film. The Truman Show, Fearless. You ever see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You ever seen
Jeff Bridges?
Yeah, have you ever seen that hoodie?
That's a good movie.
Producer, you ever seen that?
Nope.
Yeah, it's where he
Strawberries.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
criminally underseen film.
I recently watched
it's
that.
It's fantastic.
It's good, man. And he survives the plane crash.
Wasn't Rosie Perez in that with him?
She was nominated for
Academy. So, yeah.
She was great in there. She was great.
But anyways, that's the strong point for me. I wanted to talk about a Peter Weir film.
Sure.
Stars Harrison Ford, Kelly McGillis, young Kelly McGillis. Let's say that.
Hot Kelly McGillis.
Yeah, she did not age well, by the way.
Thanks, no. Adam, for putting it out there. Did you see how polite I was trying to be?
Yeah, you're always that.
And did you see producer
you're
not give a crap?
Guy. You're a classy guy.
Yeah.
Adam, no. Not so
much. Joseph Sommer, he played the bad guy, Schaefer. Lucas Haas. We're talking like a six-year-old Lucas Haas.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is you look at him. Oh, yeah, that's Lucas Haas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he did a great job. It's those eyes.
I mean, it's just Lucas Haas's face.
These Danny eyes.
And one of my personal favorites, Jan Rubes.
Rubes?
There's some Germans here. Yeah. Jan Rubes. Alexander Gudinov, actually Russian. The late
Love that
Alexander.
Guy.
So, yeah, there you go. There's the film. There's the cast. What, Patti LuPone?
Young Viggo Mortensen.
We talked about that.
Okay,
he's a credit crawler, man. He's not even in the cast, really. He's a credit crawler. Wait a second.
I like
that. You just coined a phrase.
When someone is barely in the credits, he's a credit crawler.
There you go.
I was in that film. No, you're a credit crawler, man.
That's great.
You like that?
I do. And I saw that wasn't premeditated because I saw that light bulb in your head just pop right on when you said that.
Mm-hmm. That was a V8 moment right there.
It was a V8 moment.
Trademark Q Filmcast.
Yeah, no
2014.
Kidding. 2014. Here's what we do right now at this point. We go over and we critique the critics.
Sure.
Let's critique the critics for a minute. You want to do that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go over to James Hart, Sub Savage on this one. We're talking about 1985's Witness, IMDb. What you going to go with?
8.2.
7.5. 7.5. Kind of a little there. A lot. Yeah. What about you, Hoodie? Let's go over to Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. I bet you the Amish grow some really fresh tomatoes.
I bet they're delicious.
No such thing as a rotten.
Heirloom tomatoes.
Nice plump tomatoes.
Beefsteak.
Yeah. You think they use manure to grow their tomatoes?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get magazines about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably some compost.
Mm-hmm. Manure magazine.
Well, let's talk about this tomato here, and that's the one Rotten Tomatoes put up for this film. Critics-wise, what do you think it gave the 1985 film Witness?
I'm going to go 86.
91.
Whoa. Wow.
The critics like this on Rotten Tomato.
Okay. Let's see what the
users did. At least
you
underbid. That's good.
Yeah, you underbid. Yeah, you did the old...
You're off your game, sir. You should be better at this.
Yeah. Hey,
underbidden is better than overbidden. Mm-hmm.
What do you want to bid on the users here, Rotten Tomatoes, Max Gumbo Johnson? What are you thinking?
I'll go under 82.
Straight up 80 with the users.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
God.
They came down a little bit.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It wasn't like Big Trouble where it was straight up 82 both sides, you know.
83.
Sorry, whatever it was.
83.
But it's not a big split like Coriolanus.
Yeah.
Where the 40. Users where the users were right. I'm going to rub that in for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, and it starts now. All right, let's get into the film. Let's talk about what it is, okay, premise-wise. And here we go. In Peter Weir's 1985 thriller Witness, Lucas Haas, he's an Amish boy, witnesses a savage murder in a restroom of a Philadelphia bus station while traveling with his widowed mother, played by Kelly McGillis. Harrison Ford stars as John Book, the police detective assigned to investigate the murder as well as look out for Samuel and Rachel as they confront a world that is not their own. But when Book discovers that the crime was part of a conspiracy involving several officers in his departments, he flees Philadelphia to the Amish country where Samuel and his mother live with his grandfather, Eli. There, Book goes into hiding, slowly assimilating himself into the Amish community and eventually falling in love with Rachel. But soon his whereabouts are discovered, and those determined to bury the truth, along with those who know it, descend upon Eli's farm to take Book down, forcing him to protect not only himself, but the only real witness to the crime there is. You like that?
No.
That's heavy stuff.
That sounds good, doesn't it? It's just like, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Sounds heavy.
Sounds heavy.
A lot of people did.
But we need to take a break because right now it's 7:30. Time for a trailer.
Hey, man.
They didn't know there was a witness.
Carter didn't tell me about the eyewitness.
Yeah, Amish kid, 8 years old.
A man of force.
I'm a police officer, ma'am. I have to talk to the boy.
A woman of faith.
You don't understand. We have nothing to do with your laws.
Yes, I do. Your son's a material witness to a homicide.
Worlds apart.
Now you have a witness.
Yeah, now I got a witness.
John, what's going on, man? What is happening?
You said we would be safe in Philadelphia.
Well, I was wrong.
He left with the Amish woman, right?
If they find me, they find the boy.
You bring this man to our house with his gun of the hand. You bring fear to this house.
Everyone has an idea about you and the Englishman.
They're looking for you.
I have done nothing against the rule of the ordinance.
Nothing? Maybe not yet.
We know where you are.
Harrison Ford and Kelly McGillis. Witness.
You're listening to the Q Filmcast, and we are talking about the film you just heard from right there. That is Witness, 1985, Peter Weir's Amish thriller. How often do you even say that?
Never.
Never. Ever, ever.
I can think of like one other movie with Kingpin. Amish in it. Kingpin. Yeah,
right. That wasn't a thriller.
It wasn't a thriller.
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, we made, thinking of Amish films, there haven't been many, but this is definitely one of them that rises. When you say Amish movie, a lot of people go, oh yeah, Witness. So that's it.
Don't say this is one that rises to the top because it's like the only one.
Yeah, exactly right. So yeah, there you go. There's a piece of the film and we're going to get into that. And we're going to tell you what we thought. But the first thing we do is what we do every week. You know what's up, Savage, don't you?
I do.
You know what's coming.
I know.
Producer, you ready to hear a little bit of trivia?
Yeah.
A little bit of did you know?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this question.
I know this already.
You Amish man. You should have an Amish beard. You'd look good like that.
Oh, no.
He could real sport good. One, yeah.
He could. It'd be red.
No.
Get the mustache off. Sport just the beard.
I'd look like
you got to be married to have a beard, don't you?
You know, we should have waited.
Is that what the rule is? I wondered what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Because
we got to get him hitched.
Gutenberg didn't have a beard. Did you notice that?
No, I did. Yeah, the guy.
You know what we should have
Hard.
Done?
Yeah.
Why didn't we just postpone this for 6 months and grow Amish beards?
No.
Then we'd all have to get married.
Because this is radio.
Okay. Well, let's get into this.
We all have beards.
We're not married.
Okay. Did you know that David Cronenberg was originally asked to direct this film? I could see that.
It would have been so different.
Fantastic. That would have been
so
great.
So different.
I don't know if it would have been better. It would have been different. In the film, when Rachel asks Book if he knows carpentry and answers a bit, is actually a true statement. Ford was a carpenter before he became a famous actor.
Yeah.
You knew that.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's kind of his legend, right? The lore.
That's how he got his part in Star Wars. Yeah. And American Graffiti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Working on the door.
George Lucas's house.
Yeah, he cut some plywood and all of a sudden he's Han Solo.
There you go.
Wow. Did you know?
Talk
Hoodie,
about the luckiest guy in the world.
Hoodie, did you know that although he once again plays a heroic man with a gun, this was the first role that broke Harrison Ford away from the science fiction and fantasy genre that made him famous and gave him his first and only Academy Award nomination for Best Actor?
Go figure. And I still saw it in him.
Yeah.
I saw Blade Runner all over this guy.
Yeah.
Still got it in him.
No, you heard Blade Runner all over the score.
It's kind of a restrained, brooding kind of thing going on. Maybe except he doesn't always stay restrained in this one. In preparation for her role, man, did you know Max Gumbo Johnson?
Let me guess. Kelly McGillis stayed with an Amish family for 3 months.
Stole my thunder.
Wow.
That's what I do.
You did your homework.
She's method.
I did.
She went method deep, deep, deep undercover.
Imagine if Daniel Day-Lewis would have played this part.
I was just going to say, they should hang out.
If Daniel Day-Lewis played an Amish woman, I'd love to see that.
He would have hung out with an Amish woman for a year.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
He would have become her.
Right.
Did you know that as realistic as the actors playing background roles as Amish people are, no actual Amish were in the film because they do not like to have their picture taken.
No. They were all Mennonites.
That's right. So, in other words, no Amish people were harmed during the filming.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Did you know that since the Amish community declined to be in the film, a lot of extras were played by Mennonites? Well, of course, Max just said that.
I just said that.
Did you know that an actual barn was built as a result of the shooting, was torn down shortly after the film wrapped up?
That was dumb.
That's crazy. Why would they do that? Just leave it up.
That's a great barn.
They should have had a witness museum.
Right. Yeah.
And then
Kelly
one
McGill
day,
is standing in there.
Let me ask you a question. Now, if you guys were going to get a barn built,
like
welcome
tourists.
To the Witness Museum.
Exactly. Right. I mean, think about it. If you're going to get a barn built, an Amish barn's about as good as you're going to get. Don't tear that down.
That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of wood.
Well, it's a lot of work for one day.
Did you know?
It's a lot of work, period.
Did you know that the Amish speak German in the film, although it is seldom spoken by the community in real life? Did you know that the film's script has become a frequent model for budding screenwriters, often used to display clear structure in a screenplay?
What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you know Sylvester Stallone was an early choice for the role of John Book when he turned down the role?
Horrible.
When he turned down the role, he said it was the worst decision of his career.
Wow. I'm sure it was.
But it was the best decision for the producers of Witness.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe so. Would have been Philadelphia.
Maybe there's a sequel coming.
Okay, so let's get into currency, guys. Let's talk
Witness
about
Witness 2, yo.
Yeah.
Witness this.
Yeah. Yeah. Electricity is the disease. I'm the cure. Yeah. All right. Which, if he's Amish, he would have said that.
Right. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you like that?
Cobra!
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
Yeah, well, you know what's coming here, and that's currency. We don't use thumbs up or thumbs down here.
No, why?
Well, because it's dumb.
Because it's stupid.
The currency, we're going to use...
It's common.
We're going to English use.
Yeah. We're going to use teats.
I would love to use teats.
Is it time for milking?
Yeah, time for milking. It's time for reviewing, and I'm going to use 1 to 10 teats in this thing, okay? And I'm going to lead it off. Usually I go around to you guys.
Okay,
gonna,
go ahead.
Let me just throw this out here. Watched it. I remember being just in love with this film a long time ago. Love this movie. Watched it a few times. Always loved it. Sat down with a critical eye and thought, okay, because I always hear about how this is as crisp a screenplay as you're going to get. This thing just threads one, and the characters are so well hatched. So I really held on to that, and I thought, okay, where's this going to take me? I'm still going to stick with my 9 on this. I love this screenplay. I know it's dated. It won an Academy Award for editing, which, okay, at the time was good. But there's not much here I don't love. I love the story of John Book. I love the pacing of this film. I love the fact that this screenplay makes so much sense, and I can get into that later, and I will. I'm going to give it a 9. I like this movie. I always will. I like Peter Weir. I think this might be his best film.
That is a busy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. What do you say, Savage?
I've never seen it. I've never seen this film until I watched it this time. It's been one of these things that's been circulating around. Maybe I found it to be fairly mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
I found it to be almost like a plug and play. It seemed to me to be insert actor here thing.
Mm.
And, you know, I can't really hate it. I can't really love it. So I got to give it a 5.
Okay.
Wow.
That's surprising to me. What about you? A hoodie? We got five. I'm going to give it a 9. And what do you say about Witness 1985? We're going to teats. How many teats you looking at?
I'm looking at 8. I like to keep it even.
Solid 8 teats. That's, well, you know.
You got to squeeze them both.
You have
hands.
4 in each hand.
I know what I'm doing.
But if you get 8 teats, 9 teats, 5 teats, how many teats, Max?
Me? 8. Eight teats on this thing. It was a fantastic structure. The characters were well defined. Everything worked in it. It just didn't grab me as a classic of the genre, but it was a well done film. You can't find a whole lot of fault with it.
No, you can't really hate the thing. And well, no. We haven't got the producer yet. Better hold off.
I was bored.
Why'd they raise that barn?
The Amish are so boring. They don't even have the internet.
Explosions.
The interwebs.
Oh, he's got that look. I think he's going to go high on this
one. He's going to get 10. Look, this is 10 coming.
What you got there, producer? What you going to go with?
This was very droll to me.
Dang.
He used a big word.
Yeah. I'm giving it a 5.
All right.
That's pretty high. I was entertained, but I think there was a lot of stuff they could have done better on this movie.
It is kind of. It doesn't necessarily age well in a lot of ways.
No, it really didn't.
Age is fine.
No, but it's a good movie, man. I think the...
Age didn't work with Kelly McGillis.
Well, you know.
Can we all agree on that? I think
we love you, Kelly.
Good point, producer.
35 teats. That's a lot of milk.
That's a lot of milk.
The cream will rise to the top.
Oh,
yeah,
we'll
can churn some butter with that sucker right there. You want to talk about some scenes here? Let's get into a little bit of why we landed on this. I'm going to jump out there and give it just a quick punch. Sure. I'm going to back out and I'm going to host the heck out of this thing. All
right. Somebody time this.
Yeah, watch this. You know what? There are 3 scenes in this movie I think I could put up against any film at any time as far as tension wise and the way it's brought to you. And I'm talking about the scene in the bathroom. I'm talking about the scene with the Amish fight. And I'm talking about the ending when that car rolls up and it rolls back and it's like a shark coming into town. There is some great craft here, and that's what I go way up on this thing for. I think Peter Weir is a good director. I think that it deserves its credit for its cinematography and its editing. Mm-hmm. It also got a lot of praise for the score, which maybe not. I do think it's Harrison Ford's best performance, but I think the script is great. And I'm going to later on get into just 3 quick scenes why I want to pinpoint that. These characters... it's so efficient. This script is efficient. I mean, you learn so much about these people with so little. For example, when Harrison Ford and his boss, his captain, he goes to his house, he walks in his house, pours himself a drink, says hi to his daughter by name. Okay, I know these people are close. It's efficient like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I like the pacing of this film. So when I go high up on the thing here with 9, it's because I'm calling it straight up mastercraft screenwriting. And that's it for me. I'm going to go on board with Harrison Ford's finest performance. The barn-raising scene, a lot of people say, why'd they put a barn-raising scene in there? Well, glorious to me.
It's the Amish.
I thought it was fantastic.
Glorious, too. Especially because it followed up a specific scene, which goes back to the screenwriting. It's all about screenwriting to me, and it's all about my respect for Ware. That's why I'm 9.
Did he write the screen?
I don't know.
The screenplay?
No. Actually, it was written by, I fumbled on that, didn't I? Written by, I didn't write it down.
It was written by some guys.
Yeah, get on that.
Produce that, producer.
It's right here. William Kelly, Pamela Wallace, and Earl W. Wallace.
Yeah, that's right. I did write that down, then I accidentally erased it for some reason. But yeah, it was written by a really good, well-known.
The Wallace crew.
The Wallace crew. They brought it in to bring it to life, and I think they sure did. So anyway, Savage, I went over to you second after me.
Yeah.
You didn't get up there with me. I thought you might really like this, but what you got?
I didn't dislike it. I'd never seen it. And it's one of these things that has some renown coming into it. And I like Harrison Ford. I like Kelly McGillis. I'm not a fan or not a fan of Peter Weir. I mean, I didn't know his work by name. I found this to be when somebody's at a peak of their celebrity, here's this vehicle waiting for them to plug and play. And maybe this isn't a good equation, but I kept feeling like Bird on a Wire with Goldie Hawn and Mel Gibson. And really, it was almost like insert any actor, any actress into this film, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter that it was Harrison Ford or Kelly McGillis. They didn't. I mean, if it was Sylvester Stallone, maybe. I mean, okay. I didn't feel like it mattered that it was Harrison Ford. So I didn't think he did anything special. Okay. I didn't feel like Kelly McGillis did anything special. If anybody did anything special, it's Lucas Haas, because he can stare down a person.
That is a hell of
a face.
He's
got those eyes.
He's got those eyes, man.
What did you think of the big scene in the bathroom? A lot of people talk about that.
Well, I was surprised that it was Danny Glover, for one. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, Danny Glover! You know, I don't know. It was almost like, I don't want to say cut and paste or cookie cutter, but it was like, okay, here's this. And you say, I like that structure. It was efficient. To me, it almost seemed rote. It was like by the numbers.
I kind of understand what he's saying. A little bit of off the rack kind of thing.
It was. That's the best way to say it. It really did feel off the rack.
But it felt so cozy when I put it on.
And then there was some, and it skirted that, for me, it skirted almost timeless with dated. The city stuff was dated, you know, the language, the lingo, like, look at the threads, not me, daddy, it was the threads on the.
Okay.
The language was a little dated. Yeah, but I didn't think it was anything special. I didn't think it was bad, you know, and the keytar thing, I kept thinking that the score was lifted from Blade Runner. That's the Blade Runner score.
Well, you know, I wish they would have used the full orchestra in this thing, too. It could have even been more grand. But what about you, Hoodie? You gave this an 8. Yeah. I want to get into what you think of this film. You've seen it a few times, I think.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times.
What you got?
I like what I didn't know that it had such a reputation as being something that I guess maybe film students should look at as far as structure. But the structure is the one thing that popped out at how fluid the story just effortless. I guess it just kind of fell together. A lot of stories and a lot of movies seem very forced, and you can see that they were really just trying to get this hero to move through the story and go through all the challenges and all that stuff. And this one. Just felt really, you believed every second of it.
Yeah.
Being in Philadelphia, totally bought that. It was great. And to pick out one specific scene was when he drops them off at the back at the farm at the community, mm-hmm. and he says, I can't stay. That's exactly what this guy would do. Mm-hmm. Tries to drive away, but his wound's too severe. He ends up crashing. Now he has to stay. I was like, it doesn't get better than that. That's fantastic.
Tore that birdhouse up.
Loved it.
That was a big birdhouse.
Yeah, it was.
A lot of birds out there.
Max, you get into a little bit here. What do you have to say? You went up here a little bit on this film. I think you have some respect for it. So talk about what you got.
I'm the same as Matt, and you brought up the thing about the screenplay. I didn't realize this the first time I'd seen this movie, which was years and years and years ago. But it really is amazing how effortless the whole story plays out. And specifically, I wanted to bring up the romance angle between McGillis and Harrison Ford. It never feels forced.
No.
It never feels like they're shoehorning this in.
There's always tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always tension, and then there's this outside tension of her father and her son.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't know what to do. He's not sure if he should get too close to this kid. Should he get too close to her?
Right.
And it plays out completely how a natural relationship would build between two people that get close to each other. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, and to speak to that, I said there's always tension, and there really was always tension between their two characters. Even at the beginning, she didn't like him in the slightest bit.
She hated him,
Because, she's...
We don't part of your city ways.
We don't. Your laws don't apply to us.
She didn't. She didn't want to involve herself with the guy who was only good at whacking.
So you had that tension, which through the movie, evolves into the sexual tension, and it was just such a seamless thing to happen.
Yeah,
it was great.
It was completely seamless. That's a great word to put it. And I did not notice that the first time. I mean, I was relatively young the first time
13,
I saw it.
14,
but,
yeah.
Nah, I wasn't that young.
Okay.
It does really, it really is amazing. And I can see, now that I've read that they point to this as a screenplay that budding writers should look at, there's a good reason for it. How everything progresses in such a natural, organic way. There's nothing forced in this film. Nothing at all.
And that's what really stands out to me, too. And you've brought this up before, and I think I really am getting to the point where less is more with screenplays. And sometimes it's like, okay, I know for a fact that he's charmed by this wife and this kid in this movie.
Sure.
Why? Because he giggles when the kid belches when he's eating the hot dog. And that whole little quick scene.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At the diner, if you know what I'm talking about.
And she does, too, which was surprising to me.
Do I need more than that to know that he's kind of really got a soft spot for these people? That's it. Let's move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets me fill in all the gaps. And as far as the relationship here, this is absurd. We're talking about a Philadelphia cop falling in love and basically getting it on with an Amish woman.
It's such a simple story. I mean, it's really, you could sum this up literally in one sentence if you try it hard enough, which I think you're supposed to do.
But. Yeah, I mean, really,
but I never can.
Yeah, Amish guy, you know, Amish right. guy goes right. to Amish town.
But
they didn't
attach a lot of like history to this guy, so no. you know, he's not like a really broken cop. No, you know no. what I mean? But he doesn't like religion, and all these little details mm-hmm. just fall onto him.
Sure, and let me tell you why that is another good example of that too. Is when all right, let's look at the backstory of this guy. You know what we get for the backstory that just works and is all I need. When Kelly McGillis is telling him, well, I had a conversation with your sister. And
that,
she says,
that's what I was about to say. The
she says that when you get drunk and drink beer, okay, so we know he likes to drink beer. You say that none of the cops know themselves from a bag of elbows. Okay, we know he's pompous.
Right.
She says that you don't have a family of your own and you need one of your own. Okay, right. we know he's lonely. The script is lean but perfect like that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of paces itself. For example, in another big scene too, you know, the one everybody talks about, the Amish, when he kind of comes out of his Amish lair. Right. All of that leads up to exactly what this guy is going to do right then and there. You know what's going to happen. But it doesn't feel like it's just shock him with a guy, an Amish guy, beating up a guy.
Yeah.
You know that this is exactly what this guy would do from all these little ticks and whistles mm-hmm. throughout the script. It's lean. It's yeah. good.
So they made this character, and they kept really true to
yeah.
who he is through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, you know, with the gunshot. Of course he doesn't want to hang out with the Amish. That's yeah. not who he is. But now he's got it.
He has
and,
to.
And of course, he's not going to stand there and let these guys pick on him because that's not who he is. So I believed every choice this guy made. I was like, yep, that's what he would do.
I understand this is why you should study this. If that is a thing, you should study this as a screenwriter because
a
sometimes the simplest building blocks build the best. And to me, this did seem simple. There was nothing that surprised me. There was nothing that I didn't see coming two steps before.
Yeah.
I'm with James.
Okay.
I saw everything coming, and it, to me, it just seemed.
All right, can I ask you this question?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about some of the originality of what's at play here.
Okay,
because you don't see a lot of culture clashes to this degree. Certainly not with the Amish, and you can call it shticky and all that. But I think that's what elevates what is you're saying an off the rack premise or something you've seen before. It also elevates it into something maybe you haven't seen before.
In what way? I mean, are we dealing? I mean, because our top three is going to be Stranger in a Strange Land or A Fish Out of Water. This is something that we've seen in many, many facets,
sure,
many ways.
But you know, I think
what do you ascribe the difference in this film to?
Okay.
Is it the religious difference?
Well,
the city country difference?
Maybe a bit. Yeah, I think that it's going to be when I say different. Obviously, yeah, Stranger in a Strange Land, all this stuff. But what I think elevates it to something unique.
Okay.
Is just how much, not that he's in a different place, but how these cultures truly are different. I mean, you're looking at two cultures in opposition of each other. His culture from where he came from to his culture of where he is now. You're looking at two different communities, how they operate,
function. He seemed to assimilate fairly easily into this culture.
Maybe it's what he needed.
There was very little conflict.
It seemed also, too, like he was a carpenter, right?
Yeah,
so absolutely.
It was almost like that's who he used to be.
Right.
Now he's a cop, and this was kind of like him returning to, you know,
a pure sense of himself.
A pure, sure.
Yeah.
I think this truly is a true culture clash movie, and that's what I think makes it plays that up very nicely, and I think that's what makes it more than just your standard man hiding out, waiting to be found movie. I think that the cliches may be there, but I think they're nicely done.
Well, I mean, that's a different thing. I mean, you know, a man avoiding something, the hiding out genre is different than the fish out of water or the stranger in a strange land. I mean, the fish out of water, and once we start going through our top threes, you'll see just how many of these things there are.
There's tons of them.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so this archetype, this exists.
Right.
And for me, in my opinion, it just... There's nothing special.
You know what we need to do?
This.
Why don't we take a quick break? Run a little long on this segment, but let's take a break. Listen to a piece of Witness. I'm not sure what it's going to be. We're going to listen to one more too before we go to our top three, but I think we need to hear a little bit of John Book, Harrison Ford.
Awesome name, too.
Yeah, great name.
Book.
Awesome name. Yeah. John Book.
Surprised it wasn't Carpenter.
I guarantee you,
right.
he's a fish
Jesus
out.
Carpenter.
He's a fish out of water in this scene right here. We'll come back and get into it a little bit more here in just a minute.
Your sister said you don't have a family.
No, I don't.
She thinks that you ought to get married and have children of your own, instead of trying to be a father to hers.
Yeah.
Except she thinks you're afraid of the responsibility.
That's interesting. Anything else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She said that she thinks that you like policing because you think you're right about it. And that you're the only one who can do anything. And that, when you drink a lot of beer, you say things like, none of the other police know a crook from a bag of elbows. I believe that's what she said. Good appetite.
Okay, so there it is. Witness 1985. There's a clip from it. That's the film we're talking about tonight. And I want to talk about some scenes.
Sure.
I'm going to talk about some scenes. Actually, you know what I want to do? I want to get over to the producer first. He doesn't like this movie. He called it like asinine or something.
I said droll.
Droll. That's what it was.
I think he read that in a dictionary or something.
I think he's confusing it with crawl.
I'm learning some stuff.
You know what I want to learn? I want to learn why you only gave this a 5, Adam. Talk about something from this film, whether you like it, hate it, whatever. Okay. Talk about it.
Honestly, I think they could cut about 20 minutes of this because there's a lot of unnecessary shots to me.
Like what?
Just a lot of the buildup of him trying to learn to be Amish or whatever.
Learn to be Amish.
Learn to be Amish.
And it's just, not a very long film, though. It's like an hour 45, something like that.
Yeah, it's good. Like
still,
that. Yeah,
I
it's
mean,
lean.
15
that whole
minutes
section
cut.
Where he learned to be Amish. we don't need that. Right. Put on the pants and the hat. We're fine.
It seriously could have been cut. I mean, you could have shown a couple of scenes, but they just kept going and going on that, and I just didn't like it.
Okay.
And it had one of the worst endings I've ever seen in a movie.
What?
What?
Huh? How is that possible? Talk.
Really, the bad guy just goes, oh, I'm so sorry. Here's my gun.
Oh.
And not only that, he hides behind a kid. That is so stupid.
That was pretty awful.
No, that was pretty good.
I thought that was horrible.
You want to
kill
him?
Horrible ending. I'm sorry. I hate
okay.
that.
Okay. Anybody want to talk and part ways with him on the ending?
No,
like the ending. Why
I
is
like
that?
The ending. I like the ending. The guy was defeated. He realized that he cannot do this. He cannot kill these people in front of everybody. And he is a broken man. He's done. And he's defeated. He's over. It's done.
I liked how Harrison Ford stood up to him and used the only tool that he had.
Yeah.
Which was logic. And you know what? What are you going to do? You going to kill me? You going to kill the boy?
Which is basically what I just
said.
Why
not?
And you could see the guy.
Why not?
Did the Amish know who this guy was?
Oh,
no.
Adam.
I think that the guy for Adam just realized that he didn't have enough bullets to kill everybody.
So you think if this guy had killed Harrison Ford and the kid and Kelly McGillis, they would just stand by and say, okay, he's not part of our world. We'll just let him go. Do you think they would not attack him and grab him?
We got to move
they
on.
They dropped their pitchforks before they
okay,
came
wait
over.
A second. Right. Adam, okay.
You're crazy.
Right. We got to move on. What I'll tell you this is when I saw Schaefer's face melt, and he didn't know that was coming, that was a left hook out of nowhere to him. I thought that was a great ending.
I thought it was fantastic. He did not expect John Book to do that at all. Say, okay, you want to shoot me? You want to shoot the kid? You want to shoot her? Go ahead, do it.
And you know what?
And the guy didn't. Yeah. The guy was like totally... thrown, yeah. Yeah, like you said, left the hook. He was like, I did not expect that. There's no way I'm doing that.
Because John Book knew he was cracking because he kept telling him, you lost the edge. You lost the purpose. You lost your way.
Right.
And the two scenes that he told him that in, you could see him start to bite his nails like he knew he lost his way. This was John Book's ace in the hole. He knew he could get this guy this way. He could break him this way. I like that.
But it's so good, too, because it showed the change that Book went through. You know, through the whole process, the build-up, you know what I mean?
Instead of whacking him?
Well, no, I mean, he comes from the violent culture. He beats people up, and that's not the Amish way.
He's good at whacking.
That means he's made that flip, and it was a double-edged sword there, too.
Yeah, can I ask you, Hoodie, a big scene in this film is obviously the ice cream scene. I think we all know what that is. Mm-hmm. This is where...
Right.
Yeah.
And it just led up so well. And the scene before that, he finds out his partner's been killed. I'm coming to effing get you. Remember he says that?
Yeah.
He's a bundle of nerves, man. He's ready to blow. And then this guy shows up with his ice cream cone. Did you like that scene? That's one everybody remembers. Did it work for you?
You know what? That's not even one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
No?
I liked it, no doubt. I thought it was great. And I really liked the blonde guy. What's his face?
Die-hard guy.
Gudinov.
Yeah. I like the expression that he had on his face when the guy was putting the ice cream on it. Because that guy, I mean, that wasn't passive.
It was resignation.
It was restraint. He was very restrained. Yeah. And Harrison Ford basically, or Book, just did exactly what that guy wanted to do. So that's, you know, you can tell that it's in pretty much everybody, whether you act on it or not.
Yeah, I sense that too. Yeah. And they kept saying he was an Amish guy from Ohio. Yeah. That's my Amish relative from Ohio.
And that goes to the end too. When Harrison Ford was leaving, this guy's, you know, walking past the car leaving, and he just, you know, kind of flips his hat to him.
You picked up on
it. Doesn't even really say goodbye. I was like, wow, that's...
Yeah.
They didn't have to do that, you know. They didn't have to write him in, drives past,
Right.
Diehard guy. Hey, diehard guy. Which I'm pretty sure is how it's written in the script.
Right.
Savage,
good enough.
I want to go to a couple scenes and just ask you your opinion on them. A couple of them in particular, okay? And I'm talking about the relationship with him and the boy. I think that's also a big backbone here. And you say you like Lucas Haas in this film. You like his face.
He could stare down on an adult for sure.
Is that a strong point to you? Because there are some great scenes with him and Harrison Ford. And he really stood up to Ford in this film. Especially two scenes in particular when he's getting the first bit of information from Haas. And there were two when he was born Stumpik and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You could almost see that tenderness form with Book for him. And it stayed throughout the entire film. Another character in this film, and Max, maybe you can lead up on this one. We're talking about Jan Rubes. He was somewhat of the comic relief in here. And he really pushed the Amish train of thought on everything forward here. He was kind of the Amish compass of this film. Huh? And especially in a scene like where he talks to Lucas Haas about, you can see in this man, you can see his evil.
Yeah.
Would you shoot this man?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'll shoot what he does. He really led that part of the film along nicely to me. I liked his character. I thought he was funny at times.
You're talking about the older guy.
I'm talking about Eli. Yeah. I liked his performance. I thought he was so well written in this film, but what do you think?
I can't find a fault with any character in this film. Everybody played their part to the script as it needed to be. And that's not to say it's a plug-and-play sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like you need it. If you're going to have a story set where you've got one of the English coming into the Amish world, you've got to have both sides of that story portrayed, both as the strict Amish guy.
Yeah.
And you've got to have the Kelly McGillis character that's sort of like, what else is out there? And even when they left to get on the train, Gudinov told him, said, oh, this is your first trip to the city. You're going to see so many great things.
You'll see so many things.
You're going to see so many wonderful things. So they knew, you know, there's stuff outside of their world. That's just fantastic. Here's a scene I loved when Lucas Haas went up and looked at that statue.
Yeah, that's a World War I statue.
Yeah, and then went back, and the camera just panned out from him, and he's standing in front of it, and they just focus straight in on him and they just pull back. He looks so tiny
and
in
vulnerable.
Front of that statue. It's like, wow, that's awesome that he's so almost insulated and isolated from this whole world that he can see something like this and just take awe in it. And we see stuff like that every day and just kind of walk right by it.
That is a great scene.
Yeah, but
how
many times
do
you get to see someone kart surfing from a train?
Yeah, that's true.
You don't see that often either.
That was amazing.
That was cool, too.
Did you get the feeling that only an Amish could do it that well?
I got the feeling that literally only that man is able to do that.
And, you know, if you think about culture clashes, in his world, that's equivalent to pulling up in a new Corvette.
There you go.
I mean,
it's like, whoa, look at this guy.
Yeah, watch this guy here.
Check that out. I wish I could do that.
And he's got a mullet and a mustache.
He does. A mustache.
He's got his sleeves rolled up.
He did. He had the Amish sleeves rolled up.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of the Amish,
I'm a badass Amish.
Yeah. I'll kick thy ass. and then I'll churn thy butter, which is, he said, all the ladies. But
I like the whole dichotomy between the two. I mean, I know that's the whole point of the movie is that the dichotomy between the two cultures, but they played it so well.
Yeah.
And it never seemed gimmicky.
No.
It never came across as like a cliche. It never seemed forced.
Yeah.
It worked it worked really, really well.
Yeah. It never overstayed its welcome either. It seemed
it
pacing
kept
was
moving
excellent.
The movie forward. They kept moving the story forward. They kept moving it forward to the point that when the guys from Philadelphia actually showed up, you weren't really expecting them to show up.
No, and can I say one quick scene about that? There's one frame. I don't call it a scene. It's a frame. One of my favorites.
Stare down that road.
It's almost like three literal monsters rolling into a place that has never seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. And that car rolls up the hill. And you're like, what is this all about? You know what I'm talking about? Almost like a fin. Almost like a fin in a water.
It's like Jaws.
Before the car, you know, even breaks that hill, it's just a shot of the
road.
Just
a shot of the road
really,
for like 30 seconds.
Right. It feels like forever. And you're just like, okay.
I didn't know that was what I wanted to see there. But
I'm seeing everything that you're giving me. What am I looking at?
I thought the exact same thing.
Broke the surface and then rolled back down. I was like, that's amazing. And then, of course, followed by the three guys walking in was just great. That's one of my favorite shots.
It was almost like a Sergio Leone movie. I was thinking these three guys are just coming in to take revenge on this guy that they felt has wronged them, but he's the good guy. We're rooting for him.
Yeah, and to see Book take him down with logic too was really something.
And corn.
And corn.
Corn.
He was creamed with corn.
Buckshot.
I don't know what else to say. I thought that was pretty cool. And Danny Glover just leaving a big old bloody stain on the wall. Yeah. That was intense. I'll put that up with any film. I thought that last scene, I thought that was pretty freaking powerful.
Even him digging through the kernels to try to find the gun. That was really tense for me.
You know, one last scene I want to get into, and I'm going to just leave it at that for me, but is once again the barn raising scene, because I'm looking into some of the opinions of this film, and a lot of people say, why was that in
there? I love the barn raising scene.
I did too, and it goes back to...
Regardless, that was awesome. I mean, that was an awesome piece of filmmaking, yeah.
I'll tell you why I thought it was awesome. The scene before that, you have Schaefer going into the other guy saying, you know, we're a family here. We look out for one another, and you're going to play along or you're going to be dead. And he's talking to the book's...
He's like, you're healed, so you can go home.
He's talking to book's partner, so... You get an immediate sense of how these guys look at family and sticking together, and you're whisked into this beautiful set and beautiful scene of the barn raising when you truly see a community in action and when you truly see a family in action and when you truly see people looking out for one another. So when I see that barn raising scene in contrast to what was just before that, it's showing you complete duality there. I did not see that as boring. I saw it as necessary to the script and then as a standalone piece of film.
Yeah.
It's a great piece of work.
Yeah, so. I thought it was kind of a Harrison Ford vanity thing, though, too, a little bit, because it was like, watch Harrison Ford saw. Yes. Watch him drill.
Yeah. I can
watch him hammer.
I mean,
watch him make love to an Amish woman.
Wrong.
Yeah. He never did.
Maybe.
Hey, anybody have any
it
final?
Was, the barn building scene was a total connection between what he was used to and how he was connecting with these people, and they said, I know you know a little carpentry.
Right.
Yeah, a little bit. So, well, can you come help build the barn? Yeah, sure. I mean, it was a bonding scene.
No, and I
it
totally
wasn't a vanity scene.
I get that.
I think they said, let's build this in here so we can watch Harrison Ford.
Well, Harrison Ford was a carpenter, you know.
We should put more carpentry scenes in Harrison Ford movies.
I don't think that was a vanity piece for Harrison Ford.
No, I don't see that.
You're saying if you can't say that it was all lean, this thing is like it's lean and it does this. That barn raising scene, which I love, don't get me wrong, I love it. I think it was beautiful and I think it was amazing what they did. But it goes on a little too long. It's like, okay, Harrison, he's climbing the thing now. Now he's sawing. Now he's drilling.
It shows him connecting to the community of the Amish.
That never once occurred to me. It never once bothered me.
Not at all.
But you could have done that in a third of the time.
Well, let me tell you what I remember from this scene is when he shares a glass of lemonade with Gutenoff. That tells me that, you know what? No matter the consequences or how it ends, these people truly live in peace.
I get that.
So,
you know, I like the scene.
There's a lot of play. I like it. We're going to take a quick break here. Listen to a piece of this film we talked about tonight. We're going to raise us up a trailer right here. And while we do that, you be careful out there among the English. We'll be back in a second.
This gun of the hand is for the taking of human life. We believe it is wrong to take life. That is only for God. Many times wars have come. And people have said to us, you must fight, you must kill. It is the only way to preserve the good. But Samuel, there is never only one way. Remember that. Would you kill another man?
I would only kill a bad man.
Only the bad man, I see. And you know these bad men by sight? You are able to look into their hearts and see this badness?
I can see what they do. I have seen it.
And having seen, you become one of them. Don't you understand?
There you go. There's a piece of the film, Witness 1985. We just talked about that. And that gets us into our top three, inspired by this film. And we're talking about our top three Stranger in a Strange Land movies. I guess that's the right way to say it. Max, you down with that?
Fish out of water films.
Max likes fish out of water.
Yeah. I mean, thank
about
you, Frank.
The same.
Kind of
about
the same
thing.
Yeah.
Who
pretty
wants
much the same.
You say potato. I say
potato.
Yeah.
You say Amish. I say Amish. All right. So let's get into this, guys. I tell you, I'm not going to leave this one off. I'm not doing it. I'm going straight to the producer. I want to hear him first.
Oh, wow.
Number three. And we're talking about Stranger in a Strange Land.
He didn't like that.
I don't even like it.
Doc Hollywood.
Okay.
Doc Hollywood, love it.
That's good.
Hollywood.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Good answer. Good answer.
That's the first thing I thought of when I was watching this movie. I was like, wow, this kind of reminds me of Doc Hollywood.
It's approved. I approve it.
I approve the answer. Didn't remind me of Doc Hollywood whatsoever, but it's a good answer.
There you go.
Kick it, Max. What you got, number three?
Number three. Wow, this was tough for me.
You have a bunch.
I've got tons of them, and I could have kept going. Number three, I'm going to have to go Back to the Future.
Ooh,
Back
okay.
to the Future.
The whole premise of Doc Hollywood
of the movie. Yeah, speaking of Doc Hollywood, another Michael J. Fox film.
Right.
Wow. It's a Strange Land.
Yeah.
Just pick one.
I just love that Calvin Klein.
Or that Clint Eastwood.
Or that Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, I'll give you my number three. Tell you my number three. Let me choose here. See, I have a little list. I got to see what inspires. I'm going to go with Coming to America.
Okay.
Escalante.
You like that?
Yeah, that's great.
You like that?
I just watched
Eddie
like
Murphy
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Queen.
That it was had on my list.
Mr. Randy Watson.
Randy Watson.
I knew it was coming.
Give it up for Mr. Randy Watson.
There you go. Y'all might know my next guest from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. Please give it up for Mr. Randy Watson.
You know why I picked that? Because I want to hear somebody say Mr. Randy Watson.
Because I could say Randy That's Watson right. all day.
We've done that before, and maybe we're not as welcome.
Did what?
James Hartsup Savage, number three for you. What is it?
Didn't fall for it.
Antonio Banderas, 13th Warrior.
Never seen it.
Excellent.
Karate
That's a good choice.
Movie or something.
That's great. I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but now I love it.
Eaters of the Dead,
Mike Crichton.
Yeah. Is he a stranger in a strange land?
It's Beowulf, basically.
Basically, yeah. And it's supposed to be found footage in a book form.
It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about Eaters of the Dead.
Anyway, 13th Warrior.
Great title.
Anywho.
What about you, Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of outerwear, quality-wise?
Man, I shouldn't even say this, because I never say this right. Borat.
Oh,
Borat.
That's
cultural
great.
Learnings Borat. For to make better.
Great nation of
Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
They were the leaders of potassium. Remember that?
I do remember.
They have better potassium than anyone.
Right. And Sacha Baron Cohen is bound from going to Kazakhstan. I mean, he's
who wants to go there anyway? Piece of crap country.
Whoa.
They even made a season killer.
I said it. I don't care. Screw you, Kazakhstan.
They made a sequel to that. Kazakhstan did.
All right, the Q film got banned from Kazakhstan.
Yeah, we're banned from Kazakhstan. Where are we going to get our potassium now?
I don't know, guys.
Not Kazakhstan.
Bananas.
They're totally going to shut down the whole supply of potassium to the U.S. We heard Q Filmcast put down Kazakhstan. No potassium for you.
Oh, my God. We still have the greatest producer. No matter what country he's from, he's the greatest producer, and he's going to give me his number two.
One of my favorite books of all time, made into a movie a couple of years ago, John Carter.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alien.
No, that's good. Oh, yeah.
I don't know the book, but I saw about a quarter of the movie,
Princess
and I say
Mars.
I say bleh.
No.
Say it again. Bleh.
No.
I think most of the world said bleh.
No. No one understood it. It was one of those movies that
they spent $200 million and it made $100 million.
Yeah.
And it totally lost. It almost bankrupted
No
Disney.
One understood what the movie was about. They named it John Carter. Horrible title of a movie.
Agree?
Disney.
Whatever, man.
But such a great book. Read the whole series.
Nope.
We're talking movies.
Nope.
Okay, Max, number two. Number two for you. What is it?
Well, I had to change my number two because he picked Borat, so I went with something else.
Yeah. What is it?
Borat was my number two, but I changed it to Idiocracy.
Oh, okay, good answer.
Yeah, good on you, sir.
Fancy.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Because it had the greatest president ever.
I think it had with the greatest opening ever.
I love that
the
movie.
The tree.
Yeah.
I love
brilliant.
That.
That's brilliant. Because
love Idiocracy.
That's the future of the world.
That's the
people.
Future of the world. Yep.
We may already be there.
Exactly.
We're not far.
Let me tell you what. I'm going to keep it in the queue. I'm going to keep this one in the queue for my number two answer. I'm going to go with Wake and Fright.
Oh, that was
a good one.
That's excellent. How is that not your number one?
Good one.
I don't know, man. A little bit of the desert loving between him and Donald Pleasance. That's a little place I don't want to go.
That's excellent.
Stranger in a strange
stranger
land.
Stranger in a strange
land. That's some strange land, buddy.
What was the name? What was the name of the town? The Wabba.
The Wabba. The Wabba.
Yabba.
The Yabba.
Yabba.
The Yabba.
The Yabba.
Yabba. Yabba. Yabba.
Stay and have a drink with me. I don't want to. Stay and have a drink with me. I don't want to.
Yabba dabbling dudes.
How you doing in the Yabba?
How you doing in the Yabba?
Yabba
I want to go.
Dabbling dudes.
I'm going to give one more nod to that film. I love that movie. That's a Stranger in a Strange Land film. All right, Savage. That brings it over to you. Number two. What is it?
So many. I'm going with another film I loved as a child. Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes.
There you go.
Ooh. That was one of the first ones I thought of.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of more as I just sit here.
I think that's the first time I ever fell in love with a lady.
Really?
It's Bo Derek.
Oh,
no,
yeah. That's
no,
right.
No, that's Tarzan the Ape Man.
Well, that's the first time I ever saw
When she was rubbing that white stuff all
that's
over.
That's the part. Yep, that's
yeah,
the thing.
Forget Greystoke. I go with I go with Tarzan the Ape Man. Yeah.
I think he's thinking Greystroke.
Okay. Number two, Matthew St. Hoodie, what you going with? Man.
Enemy Mine.
Good answer.
Wow,
good
that
answer.
Was on my list, too. I had to scratch it out.
Well, I said it, so we're good.
Awesome. I love that movie.
We're covering all fantastic. Our bases here. Let's get into our number ones now, and that brings us over to the producer. End this thing up. Round it out. Let's get into our number ones. You lead it off. We're talking about, what are we talking about? Stranger to Strangeland movies. Inspired by Witness. Go ahead, Adam. What's number one?
I have three great top number one.
I just need one.
I know.
Pick one.
Jack Skellington, Nightmare Before Christmas.
That was on my list.
It's a good answer.
Skellington.
I guess he was in Christmasland. And
yep.
Yeah.
And he even had a song. What's this?
That's legit.
It's a pretty broad category.
Yeah.
Really broad. Right.
What about you, Max? What's your number one?
Number one, I had to go with Being There. Peter Sellers.
There you go. I like
Chauncey the Gardener.
Yeah, there you
poor
go.
Poor fella. Yeah. Poor guy.
Was he poor? I mean, he was that guy.
No, I don't mean poor as in financially poor. Yeah, I just felt bad for the guy. He was out there in the world, and he was like, oh, you're so smart. And he was like such an idiot. Yeah.
All right, so that's up to me, number one. I'm looking at my list here. I'm going to go with Under the Skin.
Oh.
Savage, that ponderous film. You remember it?
I'm not hating that. That is, she was totally out of place and was unsure of how to get along in the world.
That was a stranger in a strange world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your number one?
Strange film.
Savage,
it's,
go.
It's Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I don't like that answer.
I hate that movie.
Well, it was Janet and Brad. I mean,
okay.
Okay.
They did not belong there.
Okay. I have not seen that movie in so long. I can't remember the movie, to be quite honest.
You know what? I've wiped that movie from my memory. It's terrible.
I went and saw it at the Belcourt and fell asleep.
I saw it at a place in Texas, and everybody said, you're a Rocky Horror virgin. I said, yeah, I am. You know what? I'm still a Rocky Horror virgin. This movie sucks.
Well, the movie doesn't suck, but
yeah, it does. It,
as far as Stranger in a Strange Land, it qualifies.
I bet.
It does qualify.
Bad. I haven't seen that movie
damn
so
it,
long.
Janet.
Damn it, Janet.
I can't even remember. But Hoodie, what's your number one?
Lost in Translation.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good one.
Boom. I like it.
Boom.
But I think that's where this one ends, man. And we're talking about Witness. We're talking about our top three Stranger in a Strange Land film, Savage. You like that?
Yeah.
Worked out, didn't it?
It worked out for me.
Yeah. We're going to talk about our big reveal. Let's go over to who is this next?
It's Gumbo.
Oh, Max Gumbo Johnson. Max Gumbo Johnson. Next week, we're coming back here to talk about what?
Wasn't really sure it was my night to pick, but since the pressure is on, I'm going to go with Anatomy of a Murder, Otto Preminger film, starring Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, that's an old film.
It's an old film, and it is fantastic.
I think this is good. Yeah.
I don't like this movie. It's in black and the white.
I own this movie, therefore, never mind.
Where's the color and CGI?
Oh, wow. Okay.
How dare they introduce a story into this film?
Well, you know, I think it's a good time for this. I do. I think it's been a long time since we've had, like, these classic 19-whatever black and white. Is it a noir?
56.
You can call it a noir?
No, it's a courtroom procedural. It's fantastic. Right, it's long. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes long.
Ooh.
But my God, is it fantastic.
Wow.
All right, well, let's get back here next week for that. And that is Anatomy of a Murder. Oh, good deal, man.
Jimmy Stewart, huh?
I think we need to join up a little bit with some classic black and white monochrome cinema.
You cannot go wrong with Jimmy Stewart and Otto Preminger.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out, because that's where this one ends. And as always, thank you for tuning into The Q. If you'd like to offer your thoughts on this film, we're talking about Witness, you go to our website, qfilmcast.net. Tell us what you think of this, or any film. You can even go back. If you still want to talk about Pootie Tang, we can let you do that.
Or There Will Be Blood.
Or There Will Be Blood.
Or you can just call us. We're still talking.
Or you can just send me a letter, 120 Peachtree Street, Nashville, Tennessee, 37210.
Say it again.
120 Peachtree Street, Nashville, Tennessee, 37210.
You hear that? Snail mail. I want somebody to step up and send Max a letter.
I bet it's going to be Ben.
I want somebody.
It's going to be Frank.
I don't want it laced with anthrax or anything like that.
I do want it smelling like perfume, though.
Yeah, somebody. I want somebody to put some perfume on a letter and send it to that address, and we're going to sniff it.
Watch you can even come visit me.
Wow.
This is getting creepy, guys.
It's getting bad. Watch some Amish guy is going to send him a letter.
Beware them English.
Yeah, be out there. Yeah. So anyways, that's where this one ends. And next week, it's Anatomy of a Murder. queued up by Max Gumbo Johnson. We'll see you then. And as always, we're going to queue it, going to review it. That's next week. And you guys just stay careful out there amongst the English. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next week. 'Cause you belong to the city. Beneath the knee.